That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras, and now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we provide you ancient wisdom for self-healing and transformation. So our guest for today is an award-winning author whose best-selling book, The Genie in Your Genes, has been hailed as a breakthrough in the field of epigenetics. Dawson has published numerous scientific papers with a focus on the remarkable self-healing mechanisms now emerging at the intersection of emotion and gene expression. And in his latest book, which we're going to focus on today, Mind to Matter, Dawson Church examines the scientific facts and reviews the studies that show, step by step, exactly how our minds create material form. As each piece of the puzzle falls into place, the science turns out to be even more astonishing than metaphysics. So you're in store for a lot of amazing wisdom that is going to be dished out. But Action Tribe, our guest for today is Dawson Church. So Dawson, are you ready to inspire?
AJ, I am so ready to inspire. I wake up in the morning so inspired myself. I meditate, and that really gets me in a place where I feel one with the universe, one with everyone, and I start my day that way, and I love extending it to this moment here. So absolutely.
Wonderful. And if I may, I mean, we've had an interview before this, but I can say for a fact that you have a wonderful energy about you, and especially your wisdom, but also your laughter is very infectious. And our listeners have also remarked that they love your what you share. So can't wait to get started. But to begin, what is that one inspiring quote that is on your mind right now, and how do you apply it in your day-to-day life these days?
Well, one quote that I've been mulling lately is by Albert Einstein. And there are lots of quotes by Einstein, but Einstein said that all great discoveries in science were made through intuition. And in fact, he'd been wrestling with the theory of relativity in his, what became the theory of relativity in his mind for a long time. And he was staying with his son-in-law, and he was really frustrated. He was going through a dark night of the soul. Mm-hmm. And then he had a dream one night, and in his dream, he saw what then became the theory of relativity. And it was like this whole structure in front of him. And then took him 4 years to work out the mathematics and publish his first paper. But I just love the idea that scientific breakthroughs don't come from lateral thinking sequentially, that from where we've been in the past, they happen, breakthroughs happen by leaping to a whole new conceptual level. And many other people have said the same thing. So I love that quote of Einstein's, that all great discoveries in science are made intuitively.
So there you go, Action Tribe. We're just beginning the show, but we have a lot of important and profound information that we're learning today, which is, these breakthroughs do not happen just through normal thinking. You have to access a different state, and you have to access your intuitive mind in order to create that breakthrough And when that happens, you will literally jump to another place, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally, and spiritually as well. And we're going to learn more about that in today's episode. But Dawson, what inspired you to write your amazing book, Mind to Matter?
Well, I wouldn't say as a skeptic, but I began as someone who thought that I'd be writing a book that looked at the links between the thought and the thing. And what I thought I would be doing is writing a book that would show that we knew scientifically that some of those links were a fact. So I believe that I would find, as I looked at the science, I thought I'd find this link and this link and this link. But then I'd be missing a few links, and then I'd have a few more links. And then what I'd hope to do, the best thing I'd hope to do, was be able to show that there is a lot of science behind the idea that our thoughts create our reality. But as I began to read studies, AJ, I was absolutely amazed, because what I found by the time I finished the book is there was every single link in the chain available in terms of scientific evidence. And so no one had ever pieced all these links together and shown how they all do form an unbroken chain, but they do. And so that, to me, was the really amazing thing as I was writing the book. And it began the exploration of the whole idea of to what degree do our thoughts create our reality. In some ways, our thoughts obviously create our reality. Like, I'm thirsty right now. I'm taking a drink of water. And no one in the audience is saying, oh, my goodness, what a manifester. He manifested water.
Yeah.
So people manifest things like putting on our shirts and brushing our teeth. But then there are people who are extraordinary manifestors. Mm-hmm. I know many of them personally. People like Tony Robbins and Joe Dispenza and Jack Canfield and Marianne Williamson and Marcy Shymoff, Donna Eden. And these are master manifestors. And so there are people I've known who, when they have a goal and a vision, and it could be a huge vision, mm-hmm. they are able to manifest that. And so I wanted to find out what those people do and how they work, what's different about them. So extraordinary manifestation, how can we do that? And also wanted to let people know scientifically what not to bother with. Because they hear people saying, I'm going to manifest. Here's one I don't want to appear disrespectful of anyone's beliefs, the people who believe this, and I do respect everyone's beliefs and opinions, but mm-hmm. people believe you can grow younger. Right. I don't believe that. I know enough science. I know enough biology. I know enough mitosis, cell division, cell death. Yeah. I know enough about just all of these things to know that cells get older and older and older. There's a thing called the Hayflick limit. When they reach the Hayflick limit, they die. Now, you can slow the aging process down dramatically, and I'm talking by 10 years or more, sometimes 20 or 30 years. In fact, my mentor says that you can slow down by up to 40 years. But can you actually reverse the arrow of time? And I don't believe you can. So I don't want people barking up the wrong tree. I don't want them trying to do things that are just unachievable. But I want them to be doing things that are achievable. And it turns out, AJ, most people are thinking that that much is achievable. And in reality, far more is achievable than they believe. The goal of the book is to really show people what they can do. And it turns out to be an enormous amount.
So, firstly, I love your book because you have not held back anything. There's a lot of research that you point out to. There's a lot of stories that you share, wonderful stories about remarkable healing and miraculous transformations. You also share action steps that people can take in order to transform their lives. And basically what you're doing is you have, like you've said, linked what's happening in the shaman's mind to what is happening in the laboratory and what they're finding, so that anyone from this wide spectrum can be able to relate to what you're sharing and also incorporate that into their lives, which is wonderful. Now, talk to us about the fact that our brains shape the world, and you've written also that our brains can create our and do create our reality. So talk to us a bit more about that.
Yeah.
How absolutely. That happens.
Well, our minds and brains are really interlinked. And mind, of course, is the process of our thinking at the ordinary, at the local level. Mm-hmm. Mind is also at the level of the non-local mind and the field of consciousness in which all things exist. And in the book, I talk about this conscious field of non-local mind. I begin the book with non-local mind, and I end the book with non-local mind. And so there is this field in which we live, and our brains are like a transceiver. of information from the field and a projector of it into reality. Just the way, for example, you are watching this right now, you're listening to this on a device. Mm-hmm. But nobody believes that because I'm listening to this on my iPhone or on my Samsung Galaxy or on my iPad, no one actually mm-hmm. believes that, AJ, you and I are inside my iPhone. That would be obviously an absurd belief to think that the broadcast that is shown by your video is coming from inside your video hardware. But that's exactly what materialists argue about the mind and the brain. They say that we have these complex brains in our heads, and so those complex brains are throwing off this phenomenon called consciousness or mind. That's like saying that the broadcast is coming from the iPhone. It just makes no sense. There's no evidence for that. And so what you want to do is really be aware of non-local mind. And I begin the book with a story, that one of the stories that convinced me to write this book. And what happened was a few years back, I was in Hawaii because I had a deadline to finish another book for a publisher, and I was really behind. So I flew to Hawaii from California, where I live, and I spent a while in Hawaii just finishing the book without distractions. And every day I would exercise and do things around the condominium where I lived. I rented a Jeep because on the island I was staying, quite a few of the beaches are inaccessible. You need a four-wheel drive vehicle to get there. Right. So every day I would hop in my Jeep, lock up the condo, get in my Jeep, drive to the ocean, pick a nice beach, swim there, and then drive back and keep writing. Mm-hmm. And the other day I was swimming at a beach called Lawai Beach. Okay. And it's about 4 hectares in size. It's a big beach. There's a reef about 100 meters offshore. It's about 3 meters deep at the deepest point, 2 meters deep at other points. And so I spent like an hour just swimming around, having a wonderful swim, snorkeling around this big, big, big bay between the beach and the reef. And I got back to my Jeep feeling really good, and I put my hand in my pocket to get the keys to the car, and my pocket was empty. And so I didn't have the keys to my car. The car was locked. Not only that, I typed the keys to my apartment to the car keys, and I had no keys to get into my apartment or into the car. And I looked at this huge bay and realized somewhere in this massive expanse of water, 2 or 3 meters down, there was a little pair of keys amid the coral heads. But I just stayed in my heart. I just kept breathing. I felt grateful for my life. I did not panic at all. And this isn't always me. I may not have always been that calm, but I was in the flow. I talk a lot about this state of flow in the book. I was in a state of flow. I swam around the bay for quite a while, couldn't find them, and I thought this is just a fool's errand. There's no way you can find those keys here. But then it began to get dark, and I thought, just head back to the shore. There's no way you'll find those. And as I was swimming back, there was a father with three teenage sons, who had just come into the water for a last end-of-the-day dip. And the three kids were diving down the bottom of the bay and back up again. And my intuition said to me really clearly, now I'm not a person who goes up to strangers normally, but I just swam up to them intuitively and I said, I see you guys diving down there. Have any of you found anything on the bottom? And the youngest boy, about 12 years old, held up my keys. Wow. Now when that happens to you once, you think. But it happens to you more than once, you start to wonder about the order in the universe. When it happens to you every day and sometimes several times a day, you just say, we live in a universe in which there is mind, there is consciousness, and the best thing I can do is to surrender myself and flow in my life as part of that consciousness, not trying to make it all up from my local mind. So that's really how I see the relationship of mind, brain, and consciousness.
Wonderful. I love that story, and especially when people share stories on our podcast, it's really, really inspiring. The fact that when you realize that you lost your keys and the fact that your house keys was connected to that bunch, you could have gone many ways, right? You could have gotten stressed or worried about what to do next, but you remained calm. And in that state, that allowed you to go back into the ocean, spend some time there, but not lose hope, and then ultimately reach out to that family and find the answer. So I think there are a lot of clues that you shared to us right in that story, especially if something goes wrong. So thanks a lot for sharing that. Now, in your book, you write about, and very eloquently you write about the forces of light, electricity, and magnetism. So talk to us about these forces and how they help with the functioning and the operation of the brain and the mind.
Well, the first part of the book is really about how brain and mind affect molecules and the world inside our bodies. Yeah. And so that part of the book is not very controversial, because I'm saying things like, when I have a negative thought, I create molecules like adrenaline and cortisol. And every biologist, every doctor, no one would disagree with that statement, that when my consciousness shifts, my molecule shifts. I'm literally creating molecules by the process of brain and mind. Yeah. So I'm translating an abstract emotion, fear or anger or resentment, into a concrete molecule like cortisol and adrenaline. And I've done several clinical trials of cortisol showing that cortisol fluctuates based on our consciousness. So here we are able to create things inside our bodies. And they don't have to be the result of actual physical objective stresses. If I think back to an event that stressed me out, just the thought of it will create those molecules as well. So by thought alone, in the absence of any objective threat, if I think about a bad thing that happened to me, I will start to create these molecules. Nothing bad's happening out there, but I'm making these stress-filled molecules inside my body. And that's really, really not hard or not controversial, although I do trace exactly how we do that and how positive thought produces enormous shifts inside our bodies and cumulatively affects our longevity, not by a year or two, but by a decade or more. So that's the first part of the book. And then I get to the whole part of the book where I talk about the effect of thought on material reality outside of us. And the first experiment I talk about has been talked about by hundreds of other authors. It's not new. It's 200 years old. It's the double slit experiment, where research shows that if you pass an electron or electrons through a barrier with a slit in it, that they form an interference pattern. And so the observer effect, when they're observed, they do one thing. When they're not observed, they do another thing. And this has been known for a long, long, long time. So something about observation is powerful. But I also quote and explain the latest research there done by my friend Dean Radin at Novate Sciences. And what Dean has done is an incredibly interesting series of experiments, several hundred trials of a double slit experiment, comparing a video camera, a machine observer, and a human observer. And it turns out that the experiment is significantly more pronounced. The effect is bigger when there's a human consciousness viewing it than when there is a mechanical consciousness viewing the double slit experiment. So in this way, our consciousness is affecting our reality, and science has been giving us these clues like that for a long, long, long time. But now we have much better equipment. We can do much more elaborate experiments. And so I show in the book that there is at least some evidence, not always strong evidence, not always compelling evidence, but there is evidence that our consciousness affects the four fundamental forces of physics. Now, these are the fundamental structure of the way our material world works, and they should be immutable. They should not be changeable by human beings. I mean, I should not just be able to go out there and change gravity. I should not be able to go out there and change electromagnetism. All kinds of things run off electromagnetism. It seems absurd to think that I can go change it. The strong nuclear force binds the elements in an atom together and stops them flying off. And then the weak nuclear force is radioactivity. And there's no way my consciousness, my brain, my mind, my local mind, my connection with non-local mind should be able to affect things as objectively true as molecular bonding, that it happens. One of the cute stories I have in the book, because I have stories all the way through the book, because the science is really, it's really important. It has to be evidence-based, has to be factual, but then you want to tell stories about people, because those are what others can relate to much more easily. So I tell the story about a lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology where senior chemists go before they graduate, and they have to do experiments in the lab to graduate with their advanced degrees. Right. And one of the tasks that also, this story came to me while I was working on this chapter on this phenomenon. And I didn't know, I had no stories in the chapter at that point. I wondered, how do I find out about this? So I was at dinner with my mother and father-in-law.
Okay.
And one of their, her sister's nephews was visiting from MIT and told the story to people at the dinner table, the perfect story for that chapter in my book. And that whole book came together. So this young man, MIT, told the story about how in this lab, they have to precipitate salt crystals out of a super saturated solution. And it's very difficult to do this. Everyone knows it's difficult to do this. And when they come into the lab, it takes many, many attempts before they can finally crystallize these crystals.
Yeah.
And so they know that this is true in the lab. The lab director knows it's true. They know it's a real test of their ability to manipulate the solution well and be a good chemist. So it's just one of those rites of passage that a lot of the undergraduates there dread, because it's known to be very difficult to precipitate sodium crystals out of that solution.
Yep.
So a new lab assistant started there. His first day started in the lab, and he walked in and was just getting familiar with the experiments performed there, wanted to precipitate sodium crystals. So he said, oh, okay. And he did the experiment. And right away, the crystals precipitated for him. And then he talked to the lab director and said, oh, yeah, I know, by the way, I did a bunch of the experiments you're supposed to do here. I did the precipitation experiment first. And the lab director said, you did what? Oh, you know, I saw it was one of the things you do. I mean, was I not supposed to do that? And she said, you did that on the first attempt? He said, yeah, I just, you know, just followed the instructions and it happened. So the point of that story is that he didn't know it was difficult. Every other student that comes into that lab knows the really difficult scientific challenge. And so they approach it with that mindset of difficulty. But that person who didn't know that was able to do it first time. And there are dozens of stories like this in science where experiments that are meant to be random like this aren't, because of human consciousness. So there are lots of stories like that and lots of experiments showing that people can affect electromagnetism, gravity, the strong and the weak nuclear force. And these stories are just amazing. So it means that we don't just turn molecules and shift the expression of genes and turn molecules on and off inside our bodies. We are literally able to affect molecules outside of our bodies by our consciousness.
Action Tribe, these days I wake up at 5 a.m. It's a beautiful experience. I go for my jog, do some meditation, read for about 10 minutes, and then relax to my hot cup of mushroom cacao mix by Four Sigmatic. And honestly, this beverage is a wonderful way to begin your day because it contains the goodness of reishi mushrooms, which is amazing for reducing stress and helping you relax. And it's made with pure Peruvian cacao, which is great for calming your heart. And it contains a beautiful blend of cinnamon and cardamom that's so tasty and healthy and clean because it contains organic non-GMO and it's free from fillers and carriers. Now, it's really convenient because all you have to do is just mix it with hot water. And don't be worried about your calories because it contains just 25 calories per serving. So I highly recommend that you try it out, especially if you're building your morning or your evening routine, because they've extended a really special offer for all of Action Tribe. Receive 15% off your Four Sigmatic purchase. Go to foursigmatic.com/Action Tribe or use discount code Action Tribe at checkout. That's foursigmatic.com/ACTION-TRIBE. foursigmatic.com/ActionTribe or use discount code ActionTribe at checkout.
Wonderful. That's a great story. And, you know, sometimes the double slit experiment is difficult to sort of understand, right? But you've sort of captured that in a wonderful way. The fact that he or the student went into the laboratory and did the experiment, the last experiment, not knowing whether or not it was possible or not knowing that the other people felt that it was extremely difficult and the outcome was achieved. And so what you've proven is that the observer really does affect the outcome of the experiment. It really makes a difference whether you believe or not, deep down, whether it is possible for you or not. Now, you know, let's talk about enlightenment for a bit now. You write about the enlightened brain, the fact that mystics have been experiencing these transcendental states of being where they experience intense joy, intense bliss and oneness, among other experiences. So what's happening in the brains of these people, and what have these studies found?
There is a brainwave pattern called the awakened mind. Okay. And EEG was invented in the late 1920s by a German doctor called Hans Berger. And it was originally a diagnostic tool. But in the 1960s, some enterprising researchers said, you know, let's start using EEGs to see what's going on inside the brains of mystics. Mm-hmm. So they hooked up people who are having mystical experiences. They hooked up swamis, they hooked up adepts, they hooked up yoga masters. And what they found after a while, after studying people from many different traditions, was that even though their brain waves were all over the place in waking consciousness, okay, there was no commonality in their waking state. When they were in a deep state of flow, their brain waves looked the same. The ratios of the various brain waves, delta, this is the slowest wave, theta. I show diagrams from EEGs in the book, and they're really understandable. Most EEG diagrams are not understandable by the average person. So I try and make all of this understandable. I show you diagrams you can glance at, and you'll see right away how those delta waves, theta waves, alpha waves, beta waves, and gamma waves start to change. And so these masters then had this brainwave pattern, which the British researcher Maxwell Cade called the awakened mind. They were all in the awakened mind stage when they were in their healing state, when they were in meditation, when they were in trance. They all moved into the awakened mind pattern of brainwaves. His successor, a woman called Anna Wise, then all kinds of creative people, brilliant pianists, scientists, artists, people who were in flow, and she found the same thing. Anyone who's in flow goes into this awakened mind state, whether they're a mystic or not. We're all in that mystical state when we're in the awakened mind brain pattern. So I've really been looking now at the awakened mind state, and the crucial thing I asked myself, again, one of those insights just came to me after meditation one day, and I was looking at the research on what frequencies do to cells. Mm-hmm. And we have these various frequencies from very slow waves. Delta is 1 to 4 cycles per second. So like one, that's like 2 cycles per second.
Yeah.
That's like 4 cycles per second. That's the rate at which our neurons fire in our brains to communicate with each other. And so what we found was that I was doing a lot of reading about studies showing which frequencies affect which cells. And it turns out that certain frequencies affect cells big time. Certain frequencies stimulate the production of stem cells. And stem cells are your main anti-aging and cell repair stem cells. They heal tissue. They can turn into nerve cells or skin cells or bone cells. So you need lots of stem cells to be healthy. And so frequencies affect stem cells. Frequencies affect the repair of DNA. Frequencies affect the repair of neurons and neural channels and neural signaling in your brain. But I just one day had this epiphany.
Yeah.
Not to look at frequencies and their effects on cells, but to look only at the frequencies that your brain generates when you're in that awakened mind state. And it turns out your brain is generating frequencies, the very frequencies that have the most healing possible effects on your cells. And so you're producing stem cell proliferation, more and more stem cells. You're producing stem cell migration to sites of damage in your body. Stem cell adhesion, the third wave that creates stem cell adhesion to the tissue that's damaged and then helps repair that tissue. Telomere length, enzymes that are really good for you. Positivity genes being turned on. Genes that, for example, help you have more of the substances that code for happiness in your brain. So all of these things happening just with advanced meditation. And that was the wonderful thing to see is that you can acquire this awakened mind state. If you know how to do it, you teach anyone else to acquire it. And then you're triggering all these beneficial effects through these frequencies on the cells of your body.
Oh, that's really fascinating. I mean, the fact that there have been these studies that have been conducted, like you mentioned, where they worked with the swamis or the yogis or the meditators or people, mystics even, but not just them, but also peak performers like pianists or musicians. And what they've noted is that all of them have a similar brainwave frequency where they attain the state of flow. And like you've wonderfully explained, this allows for your whole body to experience a deep-rooted healing, which is wonderful. And I'm sure many of our listeners are also interested in not just healing, but also accessing these states so that they can create wonderful or invent new ideas or bring out something to fruition. And I'm sure that somebody might be having this question on their mind. I mean, we've spoken about top performers. We've spoken about musicians. We've spoken about swamis and yogis. But what about somebody who is at home, somebody who's raising a household? Can they experience at least a portion of this state of being so that they can have their own benefits?
I'm going to read you an email I got after the book came out. So the book really inspired a lot of people to meditate. Okay. A lot of people who did not meditate before, a lot of people who had tried and failed to meditate before, people who were failed meditators who had attempted to do it. They closed their eyes. Their mind was full of thoughts, they couldn't do it. Yeah. And now I've got so many quotes from people. This is just one of them over here. And this is that person. So AJ, her name is Toni Tomlinson. She gave us permission to use her quote. And here it is. All I can say is, wow. I have been meditating often for the last year, and I have never experienced what I just did while following the audio for your eco-meditation method for the very first time. I spend probably 99% of my days full of anxiety, frustration, fear, and anger, just overall burnout with parenthood and with life. I was doubtful that I'd have any kind of enlightened experience and even kept hearing in my head, quote, you're just wasting your time, Toni. You can't get to that place inside of you. You've tried a million times before, unquote. But when I, this is step three of the meditation process. But when I sent that beam of love from my heart, I instantly started laughing and tears of pure bliss came out of my eyes. It was absolutely amazing. And I will now be doing eco-meditation every single day, feeling that love and bliss is my dream. Thank you again. And then there are 5 exclamation points. So the answer is yes. What is difficult is when I first learned to meditate, I was 15 years old. I was staying in the spiritual community, and the spiritual teacher there said to us, meditation's easy. Close your eyes and still your mind. When you close your eyes, hardly anyone can still their minds, because part of the brain called the default mode network kicks in. And the default mode network's two jobs is to, first of all, remember all the bad things that happened to you in the past, and second of all, project those out into the future. That's what happens when you close your eyes. Usually, you can't still your mind. You have monkey mind jumping all over the place. People try and do that, and they fail, just like Toni did. So that's what our teacher told us to do. It didn't work for me. It works for hardly anybody. It just doesn't work very well. But with eco-meditation, I give people simple physical steps to do. One of those, for example, and try this right now if you want to, you relax your tongue on the floor of your mouth. That sends a signal through your vagus nerve, which governs your parasympathetic relaxation response all through your body, and you relax. If you have your tongue relaxed, you can't get upset, you can't get annoyed, you can't get angry, you can't get resentful. Mm-hmm. So the simple things, there are 7 of these like that. And you do all these together, you're in an alpha brainwave state, you're in deep heart coherence, you're using neurofeedback and biofeedback to calm yourself. And then, like Toni, you just do this once, and bingo, you're there. So the book is full of 30 exercises like that that I recommend people do to calm themselves and really start to enjoy quality to their lives. Get away from monkey mind and all the worries we have. Most people, tell you, AJ, when we do their cortisol tests, they are stressed. Their cortisol level looks like they're living in the jungle, running away from tigers all the time, you know? And they're living in a nice apartment in Bombay, or they're living in a beautiful condominium in Miami, Florida, or they're living in a retirement home or something. And nothing bad's happening. And when you look at the cortisol profile, look at their brain waves. They have high beta waves. these waves of frustration and anxiety. They have low amounts of theta and delta waves, those two healing waves. I mean, they are just, you know, biologically, they're a mess. And so when you do this, when you think negatively, when you get angry or anxious or stressed or worried, day after day, it takes a huge biological cost. Cortisol produces heightened levels of skin wrinkling, loss of muscle mass, loss of bone density, loss of learning and memory neurons in the centers of the brain, a whole bunch of bad things. And the result is cumulatively, if you think negatively and have a negative take on life throughout your life, throughout many, many days, weeks, months, and years, one of the pieces of research in my book, Mind to Matter, shows that pessimists die on average 8 years earlier than optimists. Wow. Think about that. You've been being a pessimist for the last 20, 30, 40 years. It's going to kill you. 8 years longer. Compassion has that effect. Altruism has that effect. Energy therapies have that effect. There are so many ways in which you are different and much healthier if you use these kinds of approaches. So you might not think that negative thought can hurt you. And in the moment, it might cause a small cortisol spike. Do that every day, and then you start to have severe consequences. Do it for a lifetime, and you literally go to an early grave. So that's why I'm so on fire to let people know that they can reverse all of this. They can change. They can affect their gene expression. One study I talk about in the book, people were doing EFT, acupuncture, acupressure, tapping on acupressure points like this for an hour with a therapist. Mm-hmm. 1 hour of EFT tapping. And in 1 hour of working on their psychological traumas, their negative experiences in their lives, in 1 hour, the expression of 72 genes changed. 72 genes were upregulated by that 1 hour of EFT tapping, including genes that code for suppressing throat cancer, suppressing breast cancer, suppressing prostate cancer and bowel cancer, genes that code for improving memory and learning, genes that code for cell repair, genes that code for neural repair. 72 genes in 1 hour of an energy therapy. I mean, if that doesn't get you excited going on buying Mind to Matter and doing those 30 things I recommend, I don't know what will. You can just be way happier and the effect is intuitive across your whole lifespan.
Yeah, thanks a lot for sharing, Action Tribe. I hope you're listening and maybe taking notes as well. Think about and ask yourself, what is that soup that you're in? What is that chemical soup that you're in your body? Do you have a lot of stress, cortisol, you know, rushing around? Or do you have, you know, other chemicals like serotonin or dopamine or anandamide, which is, I believe, a new chemical that I've learned about. But the question is, what type of soup are you in? And most importantly, these 1 hour or 30 minute energy routines like Qigong or EFT or acupressure, don't take this lightly, because it can really help you experience a shift as well as express many genes. And so hope is there, and you can really transform your lives. Now, you know, Dawson, you wonderfully explained and you told us about the implications of having a lot of stress or having negative thoughts in our mind and how that can lead to distress or maybe illness. But a lot of times people find themselves diagnosed with a very grave sort of disease, maybe like a cancer. And you've written stories where people have gone from being diagnosed with an extreme form of cancer to experiencing a complete healing, right? So talk to us about maybe one of those stories and how exactly does this happen? Because we have many listeners who are listening to us who have been awakened, because now they need to keep in mind their nutrition and their thoughts and their lifestyle, because they have cancer on their backs and they want to really transform their lives. So is it really possible to go from having cancer to go into healing, just through these practices and our mind?
So many stories about that, AJ, and one that really strikes me, I'm getting actually chills in my body as I tell you the story of the test. And she has a book out now, so I'm not breaking any confidentiality to share her story. But Beth was diagnosed in March of 2017 with metastasized breast cancer. And eventually they found a large lump on the top of her right breast. It was eventually measured at 5 centimeters across. That is a big tumor. And they then began to look for secondary sites of cancer in other parts of her body. Yeah. And they found that under her right armpit, all of the lymph nodes were swollen and inflamed, full of cancer cells. And when cancer gets into your lymph nodes, like getting into your bloodstream, it just goes all the way through your body, produces cancer in other sites, and you die. And so they looked for further manifestations, and they found 3 spots of inflammation on her right lung. So it looked as though what was breast cancer was turning into lymph node cancer and lung cancer. And when she got the diagnosis from the doctor, was a morning in the hospital in Texas where she lives. And the doctor, the oncologist, said that this is so serious. Normally we'd make an appointment for you to go to radiology and start a course of radiation treatments, chemotherapy. This is so serious. I want you to go straight from my office today, the radiology department, get your first treatment right now. Okay. And Beth said, I need time. I need to go talk to friends. I know people. She knows a lot of people. She knows me. She knows other people. Knows some famous doctors. She went home. She emailed us. She phoned different people. And eventually she decided that she was going to see what energy could do, how energy could shift her. So she became completely focused on her healing and changing her energy. And she did that in various ways. We did EFT tapping with her. She got energy medicine treatments like Reiki-type treatments on her body. She did Qigong and did an intensive course of Qigong. Now, again, none of this has to do with changing things mechanically. It's changing consciousness, changing energy. She also realized that she was stressed out by volunteering for too many charities. She just she turned off all of her alerts on everything that was giving her alerts on her laptop, her cell phone, her desktop machine. No more alerts, no more news. Took a news fast. And no negative media, no negative music, no negative media. She just got rid of everything that was causing stress or negative energy, negative emotions in her life. And so she was focused relentlessly on doing that. She cleaned up her diet. She was exercising a lot. And so she got the diagnosis in March.
Okay.
In May, 2 months later, just 2 months later, she went back into this cancer hospital. It's a famous internationally known cancer hospital called MD Anderson in Houston, Texas. Went back to see the oncologist. They gave her new scans. Mm-hmm. Found that the tumor had shrunk from 5 centimeters to 1.4 centimeters.
Mm.
And all of the lymph nodes under her right armpit were clear.
Mm-hmm.
So the oncologist, being a cancer doctor, being an oncologist, said, well, it's great, Beth. Now let's just go in there and do surgery and cut out that last 1.4 centimeters. Okay. Beth is like, are you nuts?
Yeah.
By myself. So she had 5 opinions eventually from different doctors. One doctor said to her, it's shrinking because it's dead. And it's dead. And now the body is just clearing it away. You don't need to go have it cut out. So she just did nothing. And later on, the tumor went away completely. Blood tests showed she was totally free of cancer. I spent time with her about a month ago. And she is still cancer-free now, more than about 2.5 years later. So there are people who've had this story, and I interviewed one guy recently, 30 years later, he's cancer-free, and he used only attitude and belief to heal his metastasized cancer. So, and I'm not saying that this is right for everyone. I'm not saying that nobody will ever need chemotherapy or radiation. There are other people for whom that's perfect. It's their path to healing. Exclude any of the possible solutions you might have to any health problem. What I am saying, though, is that look at the role that consciousness and energy has in your body, and look at the role and look at the leverage those things can have over your health. You can heal all kinds of things by energy and consciousness alone. On my website, I have 5,000 stories written up by me, but by people who show how it cured all kinds of stuff. So if you look on the website, there's a pull-down menu. It has like 20 different items, starting with A and ending with Z, ADHD, autism, Alzheimer's disease. And that's just the A's. Then there are the B's, bulimia. And there's the C's and the D's and the E's. All the way down, there's research showing that energy is able to at least shift and sometimes cure virtually every single thing we have. Now, for some people, again, it's a combination therapy. They're both doing conventional treatments and they're doing alternative treatments as well. For some, it is the energy treatments are able to cure them. So look, whether it's a problem in your love life, problem in your finances, problem in your career, what role can energy play in your healing?
Got it, got it. So there you go, Action Tribe, especially if you are listening right now and if you want to make a change in your life, remember that there's nothing as strong as a made-up mind. Once you made up your mind to heal, to transform, to build a new habit, it's possible for you. And the good thing is that there are so many different practices and therapies that are out there these days that are non-intrusive and they do not have bad side effects. And the only thing you need to do is just ask, reach out and seek support, whether it's changing your nutrition or your mind or something like that, right? So remember, there is still hope. Now, Dawson, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, but there's a lot of talk and discussion about plant medicine these days because they help us attain these altered states of consciousness. Things that come to my mind right now are ayahuasca and magic mushrooms. I've not experienced it myself, but I'm very fascinated and I always want to learn more about plant medicine. So what are your thoughts on using these plant medicine to experience mystical states of being and oneness and transcendence? So what are your thoughts?
Well, the reason that all of those things work, ayahuasca and peyote magic mushrooms and alcohol and MDMA, ecstasy, and cocaine and heroin and all of these things work is because they, when they're ingested or however they're taken in, they wind up going to your brain, they cross the blood-brain barrier, and they bind with receptor sites in your brain. It's like a lock and a key. So the molecule over here, and the only reason, I mean, there are millions of different molecules in cells. In fact, in marijuana, for example, there are hundreds of different compounds, but there's one which binds to receptor sites in your brain. That's called THC. Right. So CBD in marijuana does not bind. Dozens of other molecules in marijuana don't bind. But just so happens that THC has a molecular structure that binds with these receptor sites in your brain. Okay. When you have that happen, it produces a wonderful feeling of ecstasy. Mm-hmm. That is just great. Except that all of those things have side effects. Now, over 25 years of research into MDMA, and it shows cognitive decline, increased risk of Alzheimer's disease, all kinds of pretty severe side effects to MDMA. Same with marijuana, same with all those other things. Now, think about this, okay? There was a famous neuroscientist who had this line of thought. He said, if we know that THC binds like a lock and a key with these receptor sites, then why are those receptor sites there in your body? They're there, only there, because you must have a molecule already inside your body that's that's shaped like THC to where it'll dock with that receptor site. You won't have that receptor site unless you had the same shape molecule as THC inside your own body. So he dispatched two of his graduate students to go try and find that molecule. Yeah. And that's the story of anandamide. And I'm writing a book about anandamide, and I talk about it on pages 80 through 91 of Mind to Matter.
Right.
So I'm going to read about anandamide. I tell the story in the new book about the discovery of anandamide. And these biochemists said, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. How do we find this one molecule among tens of thousands of molecules? But they put their minds to it, and in the 1990s, they discovered this molecule that was shaped exactly like THC. And they christened it Ananda, which is the Sanskrit word for bliss, mind. Because when you have an anandamide dock there, you feel really good, just like you do with THC. Mm-hmm. So your body makes an anandamide. And in the book, I give you these 30 practices. One of them, eco-meditation, a meditation practice, why Tony Tomlinson's eyes were full of bliss, is because if you do that, you'll trigger the production of anandamide in your own brain without snorting or squirting or anything, and making anandamide. Not only that, magic mushrooms, psilocybin. People microdose magic mushrooms. Well, psilocybin is simply a different molecule that docks with the receptors in your brain for serotonin. You regard psilocybin inside your brain endogenously, not exogenously, not exterior to your body, interior to your body. You've got psilocybin in your brain right now. It's your feel-good neurotransmitter, serotonin. You've also got dopamine. Dopamine is what's triggered by cocaine and alcohol. Mm-hmm. You've also got beta endorphins, and beta endorphins are triggered also by large amounts of alcohol. Beta endorphins are these morphine-like molecules, and they are three times as strong as synthetic morphine. So the meditator sits down there, starts to feel this bliss of serotonin, magic mushroom, psilocybin, sits down there and starts to feel this reward neurotransmitter like alcohol and cocaine of dopamine, starts to produce anandamide in their brains. They have a flood of oxytocin, the bonding molecule, the part of their brain that holds the self, the local self, the prefrontal cortex, it shuts down. Part of the brain, part of the temporal lobe, part of the parietal lobe that locates you in time and space, that shuts down. Now you're feeling floods of all these wonderful, pleasurable chemicals. The part of your brain that thinks your you shuts down, the part of your brain that thinks that you're in time and space shuts down, and you are one with the universe. And you are so full of bliss after you finish eco meditation, you are you're absolutely stoked. Like, I finished meditation this morning, I open my eyes, I'm like looking around me. You'd think I was absolutely high on something, and I am. I'm high on THC, and I'm high on psilocybin, and I'm high on alcohol, all these things. But I produced this all in my own brain just with meditation. So that's what you want to do. You can use those external substances, but they all come with a biological cost. Almost all of them have side effects. Some of them very serious side effects. One study of marijuana found that teenage boys who smoke only two joints have adverse changes in their brains. People who smoke lots of marijuana have extremely severe effects in the memory learning centers of their brains. Right. That's THC, anandamide, perfect doses, no side effects. So I'm a real believer in all of those drugs that you get just from meditation.
So there you go, Action Tribe. This is really, really breakthrough. Your body has a pharmacy deep within, and you can create through meditation, and in particular, eco-meditation, which I'm going to try out today. But you can create these wonderful chemicals of intense joy, anandamide, serotonin, oxytocin, dopamine, and everything that you need within your own body without any adverse side effects or implications for your body. So that's amazing. And that's wonderful to note. So Dawson, you talk about NDE. You've written about NDE, near-death experiences, in your book. And I've heard about people who are sighted, that means they can see, having NDE experiences and really being able to share it with people around the world. But you write about a person who was blind from birth almost, and she had an experience, an NDE experience, and that was pretty fascinating. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, and so that is where I'm talking about the whole idea that consciousness lives in the brain. And there's no scientific evidence that it does. In fact, there's lots of evidence that it lives outside the brain in the field, and our brains are a receiver of consciousness. And this woman had been blind from a very early age. Her optic nerve had been destroyed early in her life. She'd never been sighted. And when she was having this operation, she literally saw herself hovering above her body, and she described details like the clothing that people were wearing, a ring that she saw, all kinds of details that she could never have seen. And that's a common experience with NDEs. And also OBEs, out-of-body experiences. People have OBEs, and OBEs are not near death. They're just, in fact, meditators often have OBEs. And in OBEs, they see things, they perceive things very differently. If you do eco-meditation for a while, under the influence of a lot of serotonin, you'll start to have hallucinations, just like psilocybin will produce hallucinations. You'll start to have hallucinations. But they aren't going to be a bad, scary monster chasing you or having a bad trip. They're going to be of beautiful light beings loving you and being all around you, and you're living in a benevolent universe that really wants you to be happy and fulfilled. So OBEs and NDEs are one way in which we get out of ordinary consciousness. Now, it shouldn't take a crisis, a medical crisis, an operation, a healing crisis. You can sit in meditation, and after a while, you can trigger an OBE simply through lots of serotonin spontaneously in your meditation when you want to. I can do this after about 25 or 30 minutes to do this. So if I have a half hour to meditate during a day, I don't do it. Like this morning, I had an hour. So I then triggered that OBE, and I was floating above my body, looking down on things. It was beautiful. I just hang out there a while in bliss with the cosmos, and then you come back down. So these altered states are really ones that anybody can trigger, but you have to meditate right. Now, I also want to stress, too, not every meditation can do this. Some meditations, like Eco Meditation, does this reliably. There's one study that was published recently looking at meditators doing Eco Meditation and comparing them to a database of 7,500 EEG scans. And they found that people in Eco Meditation were right at the very top percentile of that whole database. So it triggers those. For most people, though, if you use ordinary meditations, try to close your eyes and get there, you don't have the instructions to get there. You'll close your eyes, nothing right. takes over. You're worrying about the past, you're concerned about the future, and you can't do it. You need good instructions. And so that's free on the web. Definitely, we'll give you the website in a moment, but go there and use that meditation, because that definitely will get you to those altered states and very quickly.
Got it. So I'm curious, I mean, about this lady who was blind and who experienced this NDE, near-death experience, and she was able to see for the first time. So I'm guessing a lot of sensory overload, a wonderful experience, and then she came back to her body, and now she's blind again. Wouldn't that feel demoralizing? I mean, I'm curious if she then, is she now exploring things like astral projection so that she can have more of those experiences like OBs? Do you know anything about her?
I don't know if she's gone from there. I do know that the experience of seeing, seeing very disorienting. She'd been blind from birth. And so because she'd been blind from birth, she found the experience of seeing things. You know, we would think that that would be a really wonderful experience for her.
Right.
She got pretty scared by things, and she was nervous as a result. Mm. And so I think that the end of the story was she went back into her body, and then I don't think she pursued it thereafter, as far as I know.
Got it. Thanks a lot for sharing. Now, in your book, obviously you've written a lot of stories, but then there's one of your story, a particular eureka moment that you experienced on June 26, 2017. So talk to us about what exactly happened and why were you so happy? Why were you so excited and energetic?
Well, I've had various milestones in my life, and I've been trying to acquire the states of these meditation masters. I've been reading the studies of their MRI states, other EEG states, and then focused on actually getting to those states myself. Because these meditation masters, for example, the Tibetans, they've been meditating for 10,000 hours, 20,000 hours, some of them over 40,000 hours. How do you catalyze that state in your own mind and brain? And it's pretty hard to do. But if you just persist after a while, you trigger neural plasticity and you start to have these kinds of states and be able to induce them really, really quickly. So you take 10,000 hours of meditation to do that. But at various points along the road in practicing these states, I found that I can just shift and get into those states myself. And what I was focused on at that time was there was a Chinese Qigong master who had demonstrated the ability to affect one of the four fundamental forces of physics, which is the state of radioactive decay. And this is a very stable state. Things like francium and americium and uranium, plutonium, all these things decay at a very stable level. In fact, they use these substances in atomic clocks for science because they measure time with these atomic clocks. Cesium atomic clocks, for example, are stable. They only lose 1 second every 4 million years. So this is a very stable factor. This is the weak nuclear force. And what this Qigong master could do was he could put his hands over a little capsule of a radioactive substances, and they would say to him, now, speed up that radioactive decay. Now, this should be impossible. It should be impossible for human consciousness and energy to make that happen. And he did. And he said, now, slow it down. And he did. And I then began to look for stories like this from other people. And there are several people in the last like 50 years who have demonstrated this ability to speed up or slow down this force of nature. But I talked to various scientist friends of mine and said, "What do you, you guys have great labs, you have wonderful funding, you have all this equipment. Will you replicate that experiment for me?" And they were all, "No, I don't think that's going to work, or you know, we're interested in that." And so no one would do it. So I ordered the equipment myself. I ordered a Geiger counter, a little chunk of a radioactive substance called americium. Mm-hmm. And then the day, great day came, they arrived. I sat down there and I put my hands around them and I tried to speed them up and slow them down and nothing happened. So I realized, okay, I'm not a meditation master. I don't have 10,000 mm-hmm. hours, I'm not a Qigong master. But then I had another thought. I said, you know, let me just hold my hands there and pretend this is a client and I'm sending them energy healing. And when I did that, the rate of radioactive decay spiked up dramatically. Mm-hmm. Did that. So I thought, well, wow, that's amazing. So after a while, I thought, now I'll move my hands away. Now let's slow it down. And nothing happened. Mm-hmm. So I could speed it up and not slow it down. Then my wife came home from work. And so I said to her, "Donnie, I've got this whole setup over here. Would you mind sitting down there and trying to see if you can move this Geiger counter?" And she tried again. And nothing much happened. But then she held her hands like she was healing a client. And it did change the rate of radioactive decay. It slowed down. Okay. She slowed down, but not speed it up. I could speed it up, but not slow it down. And we did these several times over the next few days. And it was really fun too. So just seeing that ordinary people without training in this state of flow are able to affect these fundamental forces of nature. And then there are lots of other examples in the book as well. And outside of the book, but I try and present the most compelling ones and the most relatable ones to people in those stories in the book. So you'll find the experiments, but also a lot of fun stories like me and the Geiger counter. And I got a photograph of me there, and I'm wearing a T-shirt that says "Mind to Matter." So, name of the book.
Got it. I'm really fascinated and interested in what you uncover in the times to come about the effect that we have through our consciousness on the decay or speeding up of radioactive matter. So that's really, really amazing. Now, towards the end of the book, you have a section where you talk about embodying the fields of mastery, right? And also manifesting our dreams. So first you talk about, if you would talk about mastery, what is the significance of mastery in our lives? And then how does this process work when looked at through the lens of energy?
Yeah, so what I was curious about was we know now from the more than 400 studies in mind to matter that consciousness affects matter inside our bodies and outside our bodies. But the question I was answering in that chapter, AJ, was why are some people so very good at this? And other people, not very good. Like, I have a friend called Susie, and she's an inspiring person. She has grand visions of what she wants to do in her life and with the world. She's a really wonderful human being, but nothing that she dreams of happens. It's just having her hear these dreams, she's onto another dream and telling you about it, and she's very eloquent about it, but her stuff doesn't manifest. Then I have friends like Jack Canfield, who wrote the book Success Principles. He also co-authored the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Yeah. And if Jack has an intention, if Joe Dispenza has an intention, if Tony Robbins has an intention, you can bet it's going to manifest because these are master manifestors. So I ask myself, what's the difference between Susie with intentions that don't manifest and Jack Canfield with intentions that do manifest? And the answer turns out to be coherent brain function. But I use it out with a laser and a 60-watt If there's a light bulb in your room, 60-watt light bulb, it's incoherent light. It's not in phase. All those light beams are scattering out from that light bulb in all directions, and it does a good thing. It lights the room. Mm-hmm. But if you have a 60-watt group of rays of light that are in coherence, that aren't, rather than moving about randomly, are moving in a coherent waveform, that's a 60-watt powerful beam of light. That's a laser. It's in coherence. And that laser that 60-watt laser will cut through steel. That's the difference between that in terms of coherence when it comes to light. When it comes to our brain waves, that's the difference between Susie and Jack, is that Susie's brain waves are non-coherent. And in the book, right, I show you what that looks like. You see these brain waves jumping all over the place. They're not in sync.
Right.
But Jack and his brain waves are all completely in sync. And so it's that ability to get into sync. And that's what people do in eco-meditation. They acquire this awakened mind state, and their brainwaves all come into sync. The thoughts they have, the intentions they form in those enlightened states, they then tend to happen.
God, that's amazing. I mean, that's so true that there are some people who, in many cases, despite not having the best education or the best circumstances, they're able to achieve and create wonders, whereas some people have all the, what you would say, conditions for success, but yet they don't get there. And like you mentioned, it's the coherence that might be missing, right? The coherence of the brainwaves. Got it. I'm definitely going to try out the eco meditation later on today. Now, you know, diving deeper, as the creator of this podcast, I've got a vision for growing this to so much more. And I envision this as a movement rather than just a podcast. And that's why our community is called the Action Tribe. So I want to attract the right kind of people and the right kind of folks to really collaborate and co-create something larger than our individual selves. So how can I tap into this, you know, collective consciousness to attract more synchronicity and more opportunities to our movement and to grow this? You know, what advice do you have for me?
Well, I love that name, the Action Tribe. And that's crucial here because we obviously are both inspired people, you and I, AJ, a lot of inspired people in this community. But then move into action. How do you move into action? That's what's critical. One lady I ran into in a workshop about 2 weeks ago, teaching a live workshop, she said, "Dawson, I decided I was going to use your eco-meditation method for 90 days.
Today.
And I just have her do like a 15-minute one. It's not a long one in the morning. But I said, 90 days, that's a good commitment of time. I said, what day are you on right now? So I said, I'm on day 115.
Okay.
Now, what's happened is she's become an addict. She's addicted to anandamide, addicted to serotonin, addicted to dopamine, addicted to all these feel-good chemicals in her brain.
Yeah.
She's 90 days, and after being in this bliss brain state for 90 days, she doesn't want to stop. So the crucial thing is to be consistent. What you find about those people is their visions are consistent, and they are consistently in those states. They don't just go there once in a while. I used to be an occasional meditator. The year my life changed was the year I said, I was 45 years old, it was almost 20 years ago, I said, I'm going to meditate every single day without fail. And that is the crucial thing, consistently. Consistency. Those meditators who meditate, and it's not casual for them. It is the foundation of their day. So that is one thing. Another thing is really abandoning yourself to non-local mind. That same wisdom, that same universal intelligence that helped me find the keys in the ocean. I'm looking at my window of my office now, and I see trees and birds and flowers and clouds. And, you know, non-local mind is running the universe. It's keeping planets in their orbits. It's the sun and the trees and the insects, all of the migration of the humpback whales. I mean, all of the stuff is organized by non-local mind, by universal mind, and it's wise. And so in chapter 2 of my book, Mind to Matter, I have a chapter focused on the science of self-organizing systems. It's called the emergence, how in these big systems, they're self-organizing. And if we're little local human beings thinking I am me and I have to make my way in the world, we're stuck in local mind. You want to just meditate and let go of your fixation on local reality and local mind, because the vision of your life that the universe has for you, that non-local mind has for you, is infinitely greater than the vision you can come up with in your local mind. So surrender, let go, tune into non-local mind, because then you're in synchronous connection with everyone else who's in synchronous connection with non-local mind, and you're in that state of flow. And then you find the keys of the ocean. You find the perfect people sitting next to you at lunch. The MIT student is just there next to me. Everything is in flow. And then those non-local visions that are gifted to you just manifest easily all around you.
Got it. Thanks a lot for that wonderful, wonderful piece of advice. And now moving into some a question that is a bit more existential in nature. My question is, and you might have alluded to this a bit, but is this a sentient world? Is there a reason for everything happening in life? Is there a grand scheme that we are part of, or is everything just random?
I believe that there is order and there is love in the cosmos. And I don't believe that because I have a theory about it, because I think it. It's I experience that in meditation. I tune into non-local mind. I let go of my local mind. And AJ, I feel so much love when I meditate. I feel that the universe so loves each of us that when I finish my meditations, I am so filled up with love, I don't have enough pockets to put it all into. I'm almost bewildered. And the mystics talk about bewilderment because you tune into that love and feel so loved, so cared for, and you experience your life works much better that way. So I believe we live in this infinitely loving universe. Now, do I believe that there is some kind of deity that is like running things? I don't have that experience. I don't experience some kind of, the old man in the sky with a long white beard, like Zeus in the Greek mythology, hurling thunderbolts and manipulating things. I don't experience that. I experience a cosmos of order, of beauty, of love. But it's personal in that sense. There aren't like gods up there, which are human beings writ large, who are sort of manipulating and pulling the strings. Right. Not my experience at all. My experience is of a loving and benevolent universe, and that my personal well-being occurs when I surrender my fixation on my local life, my local well-being, and just am part of that great non-local universe.
Got it. So, Action Tribe, we're learning about disconnecting from our ego, surrendering, and connecting to the non-local mind or the collective consciousness, because there is your key. There is where your potential and true purpose lies. And Dawson, oftentimes stuff happens, right? We have an accident, we lose a job, we get diagnosed with a disease, we experience a natural calamity. And when we're in the midst of all of this, you know, sometimes we can't help but ask, what is the purpose of all of this suffering or challenges in this existence? So what are your thoughts on that? When we go through a really difficult crisis situation or difficult situation?
Well, first of all, when you go through a crisis, if you are a meditator, you are resilient. I was at a restaurant with a group of people around a big round table a few weeks ago, and a waiter tripped and had a whole tray of dishes, and it all went slam to the floor. There's this big crash, loud crash, and you could tell the meditators around the table, we just kept on talking. We recorded the sound, and then there was no interruption to our being in flow. The people who were meditators, they jumped up. They were kind of a big startled response. Oh my goodness, what's that? They were panicked for a moment. So when you go through, when you get the cancer diagnosis, like my friend Beth got, or you have the financial disaster, or you lose your job, or you get a divorce, or your child has a terrible experience at school, any of those things happen, when you do this, you are resilient. You grow a lot of neural tissue in your brain. In chapter one of Mind to Matter, I give the story example of a man called Graham Phillips, who went on an 8-week meditation journey, but he had his brain measured before and afterwards at a university called Monash University. And over the course of 8 weeks, many shifts happened in his brain. Certain areas grew. But the area that grew most was an area responsible for emotional regulation called the dentate gyrus. And in 8 weeks of mindfulness and meditation, his dentate gyrus grew by 22.8%.
Wow.
Now, all that neural tissue in your brain to handle the traumas of life, you're resilient. And so now you're turning the software of mind into the hardware of brain. And when the bad stuff happens, you have inner strength to cope with it. So you have fewer of those things. You're wise. You're in the flow. You aren't exempt from them. Bad things happen to everyone. That there are economic cycles. Right. Economy goes up. The economy goes down. It's not like it's going to just bypass you. But you might be much wiser in your actions because you aren't being reactive. You have this core of serenity. I mean, look at the Tibetans. Their country was invaded by the Chinese in 1950.
Yeah. Over.
Thousands of monks and nuns were slaughtered, and they practiced nonviolence as they do that today. And there are so many examples of people who are Gandhi. You know, look how he overthrew the British Empire in India. You know, not by the sword, but by anchoring in his values. Nelson Mandela in South Africa. There was another man in Pakistan. The Gandhi of Pakistan did the same, very, very, very similar thing. I mean, these inspiring people, they produce far more social change in the long run, and that's why the world is becoming so much better. So it's not that all the turmoil of the world passes us by. It still hits us, but we're resilient, we have resources, and we know we're part of something greater, part of non-local mind. We don't think that this small local reality is me, when we're part of something far greater.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing. I think that is really, really profound. Action Tribe, to access the show notes for today's episode, visit my7chakras.com/351. That's my7chakras.com/351. And if you're listening to this episode on your iPhone or your Apple device, don't forget to hit subscribe, because it'll ensure that you do not miss out on any new episode that we release for you. Once again, to stay notified, to stay updated, make sure that you hit the subscribe button. Happiness cannot be traveled to, owned, earned, worn, or consumed. Happiness is the spiritual experience of living every minute with love, grace, and gratitude. Now, this is a powerful quote by Dennis Waitley. Action Tribe, this is really, really powerful, and it can be applied in your life immediately. As an action taker, I'm sure that you have your goals, your dreams that you're working toward. And every time that you accomplish a milestone, you experience a sense of accomplishment. You feel great, right? And while that is great to experience, don't confuse this with true happiness, because that type of happiness can disappear in a minute, a day, or a week. The type of happiness is derived from something outside of you, right? The truth is that you don't have to earn your happiness, like we're learning today. And through the advice of Dawson, you already have it within you. You just need to reveal the sunshine that you have within you. And when you experience even a glimpse of it, you will feel an abundance of joy and an abundance of ananda. Might, because just as Dennis reminded us, happiness is the spiritual experience of living each and every minute with love, grace, and gratitude. So Dawson, talk to us about maybe one experience or one moment where you had a challenge or a difficulty, and tell us how you overcame that difficult experience.
Well, I'm working on a new book to be published in a couple of years, and it's a follow-on from Mind to Matter.
Okay.
And in it, I tell the story of October the 9th, 2017, in my life. And my wife shook me awake in the middle of the night. I looked at the alarm clock, it said 12:45 a.m. I looked out the window of our bedroom. I saw a glow on the horizon. I walked outside. The electricity went out, and I saw a wildfire racing down the hillside toward us. And I just told my wife, we're getting out of here right now. We literally sprinted, threw on clothing, grabbed the car keys, ran through a storm of embers out to our car. Mm. And we began to drive down we had a long, long, long driveway. And my wife felt all this heat on top of her head, and she looked out through the moonroof of the car, and all the branches of the trees above her were on fire. So we drove out through the fire. We drove about 3 miles away, and it's a long story. I won't tell you the whole thing. But 2 days later, the whole area was sealed off, and 5,300 homes were destroyed that night. 22 people lost their lives. 8 of those were within 1,000 yards of our home. The fire was moving at the speed of a like the length of a football field every 3 seconds. It was moving so fast. Wow. Just killed. We were lucky to escape. And so a friend, they stuck past the army. The army was called out, and they sealed off the whole area after the fire the next day. And a friend of ours got past them, and we texted her, and we said, was our house damaged? We just didn't know if it had been damaged or not. And she texted us back 2 photographs, and there was nothing there, just a concrete slab, the chimney. I mean, it had melted refrigerators, melted the cars, melted everything. And so we had that huge dislocation and loss. And it took us a long time to recover in various ways. And but we were resilient. We were meditators, and when we got to meditate after the fire, in the next few days, we felt ourselves, again, we were traumatized, obviously. I mean, it was as traumatic for us as it was for the other many thousands of people who were displaced, but we had resilience. And so that's why I say that the wildfire didn't miraculously pass by our house. We lost our house and all our possessions, along with everybody else, in that fire. But again, it was powerful for us because it showed us we were resilient people. And so that's what it can do for you. So that's the time in my life recently, a really big time, when my resilience was put to the test. And a week after the fire, I was keynoting a psychology conference in Canada and teaching a 1-week course to psychotherapists on how to treat psychological trauma.
Wow. So, firstly, thanks a lot for sharing that story. In researching this episode, I did come across the GoFundMe page that you had put up after the calamity that you experienced. And I wasn't sure if you're comfortable in sharing that story, but I appreciate you sharing this because a lot of our listeners might be able to relate to something that they lost in their lives when things happen. It doesn't happen without any warning, but they do happen. And in times like these, our character, our personality, and our mindset is tested, and we can always draw something from that experience. So I might not be able to relate to what exactly you experienced, but I appreciate you sharing it with all of us. Action Tribe, I hope you're really enjoying today's session as much as I am. We're not done yet. Before moving on, I wanted to address a few things that you may have on your mind right now. You see, you might have many questions on your mind, most of them unanswered, part of which you are listening to this episode for, right? And out of all these questions, there are 3 main questions that almost all spiritual seekers have. Who am I really? What is my purpose here on earth? And what is going to happen to me after I die? Now, it's probably impossible to provide all the answers to these existential questions in a 70-minute episode, but life always provides us clues. But so often we are caught up in our own thoughts and emotions that we fail to notice them. So my suggestion is to become more mindful, like we're learning today, about all the experiences that you have on a daily basis. Because just as Nikola Tesla once put, if you wish to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration, which is a theme for today's episode. And with that, we've come to the last round for today, which is sort of like a rapid fire round, so that our listeners can get some nuggets of wisdom that they can act upon. So Dawson, what is the best piece of advice that you have ever received?
That's a provocative question. And I really love listening to people and learning from people. And so I have a lot of friends who are best-selling authors, and I listen to them and enjoy hearing from them too. But I have a lot of friends who are just ordinary people. One of my best friends I was with this last week is a mechanic. Mm. And I just love this guy, and I find him to be very wise too. So it's not just people who you think, you know, are best-selling authors who have the answers. Often there's a lot of wisdom in ordinary people. And as people have shared with me over the years, I think one pivotal issue has been self-love. And when people in my live workshops, when they tell me their stories and about the tragedies and difficulties of their lives, often they have so much self-blame and self-criticism. And I think just learning to love yourself is powerful. So with EFT, you learn to love yourself, accept yourself. And that is so profoundly wonderful. We're in a very positive thinking society, and people say, change, grow, transform. And sometimes we can't, or it's difficult, or sometimes we have an incurable disease or a physical issue that's congenital. So just loving and accepting yourself just the way you are, self-love just the way you are, I think that's one of the best pieces of advice I've received. And I'll always pass that along.
And if you could turn back time and spend 1 hour with someone who is living or dead, who would it be?
Well, that would be an interesting question. Spending 1 hour with somebody who's living or dead. The cool thing about meditation is you do that, actually. When you're out there in the cosmos and non-local mind, you go spend time with just those beautiful beings who are out there. So it's a great experience. And if I had to transport my physical body back someplace, place or time that was really, really pivotal, I think it would be when either Jesus or the Buddha were on the verge of their enlightenment and their public ministry. And they both had, and I talk about this in my new book, they both had this time, this period of just a few brief hours when they were tempted. Jesus was tempted in the desert by the devil.
Yeah.
The king of the demons came to Buddha, and they tried to pull them out of their spiritual focus, off their spiritual path. And only when those masters were completely steadfast in their spiritual experience did they break through to enlightenment. And so that hour when Mara, the king of the demons, was throwing everything he could at the Buddha, he asked the other demons to throw slings and spears at the Buddha, and the Buddha's focus was so strong, they turned to flowers. He told the other demons to throw mountains at the Buddha, and the Buddha could not be broken. Then he decided to, because he was failing to get the Buddha all upset by this string of threats, he thought, well, maybe I can tempt the Buddha out of single-minded devotion by giving the Buddha really good things. Like the devil said to Jesus, I'll give you all the kingdoms of this world if you bow down to me. And Mara said to the Buddha, he gave him a parade of all the most beautiful women in the whole world. Take your pick. And these great enlightened beings stayed completely focused in their attention to non-local mind and the universe. And that's when they broke through. So those hours when they were tempted and they stayed with it, those I think would be some of the hours that change things for whole civilizations. And as we do that today, as we devote that half hour or that hour in our daily lives to meditation, we know then that transcendent state we go to when we die, and we're reenacting, becoming incarnate and becoming discarnate every day for half an hour, whatever it is. We're doing that every day in meditation. And so death holds no fear for us, and we transform. So that hour would be I think my favorite time to go back to.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I think you've sort of alluded to my next question, which is, what is it one thing that you do in the morning or maybe in the evening before you sleep that has improved the quality of your life?
Meditate every day. When you first wake up, do not check your cell phone. Do not go on social media. Do not talk to anybody. Do not distract yourself. Do not read the news. For goodness sakes, do not read the news. Do not do anything. Do not condition your consciousness by anything out there. Condition your consciousness by what's up here. Here is where the news is really happening, is non-local mind. Tune to that immediately you wake up, because you have a lot of theta and delta waves and a lot of alpha going on when you wake up. If you harvest that bounty of brain waves and of consciousness and then quickly move into that in your waking state, it's much easier to get to. So I would say the first thing you do, wake up in the morning, immediately go into meditation.
Got it. And if you could recommend one book for our listeners today, what would it be?
I love my friend Jack Canfield's book, The Success Principles. And I've given this book to my children, given it to my team members, given it to friends, given it to my housekeeper. I mean, I've given this book to everybody I can think of, because it is 64 principles of success. And you want to know what successful people do? If I had that book when I was 25, AJ, I would have had a much more happy subsequent 20 years. And so that book is really powerful for me. The Success Principles by Jack Canfield.
Got it. We will definitely have all these links up in the show notes. And Action Tribe, all of you know that if you would like to get the Audible version of this book for free, then audible.com is providing all our listeners with one free Audible download. All you need to do is go to my7chakras.com/freebook, my7chakras.com/freebook. So Dawson, thank you so much for coming on our show today. Before you go, tell us something that you're really grateful for, and how can all our listeners find out more about you and get your book as well?
Well, to get my book, go to mindmatter.com. And if you're listening live, there's actually a contest running right now. The publisher is giving away free books. And there's also a webinar with me on the 7 neurochemicals of bliss you get if you buy the paperback edition this month. So that's really a lot of fun to do, to be on that webinar and also enter the contest. So that's mind2matter.com. And also there's a link to the EFT mini manual, so you can learn tapping with that. There's a link to 7 free meditations from the book. There are all kinds of other wonderful resources there. And so mindtomatter.com is the best place to go. In terms of being grateful, I'm just grateful to be alive. I just wake up every morning. I feel so grateful just to be here. I feel as though the privilege of being in a body and being able to do stuff. You know, there are plenty of discarnate beings out there, and they're wonderful too, yeah. But they envy us. We have bodies. We get to make love. We get to enjoy food and wine. We get to walk in nature. We get to meditate. We get to swim in the ocean. We get to see the seasons change. I mean, we are so blessed simply to be alive. Whether you're a man or a woman or a child or old or young or wherever in the world you live, you are so lucky to simply inhabit a body, whether your body is tall or short or black or brown or yellow or sick or well. You are just so lucky to be here. And I find myself just almost in tears of gratitude every morning simply to have a body and be here. So
awesome. Thanks a lot for sharing. Action Tribe, before we end, if you've enjoyed today's episode and if you consider yourself an Action Tribe member, then you will definitely love the Action Tribe Inner Circle experience, where you'll have access to mentors who will provide you training in a variety of topics, including discovering your purpose, activating your intuition, learning about yoga philosophy, and dissolving your financial blocks. If you're curious and you'd like to be notified as soon as we launch, then visit my7chakras.com/waitlist, my7chakras.com/waitlist, because we've got something really special in store for you. If you're on Instagram, then take a screenshot of this episode and tag me so that I can share your story with our community. My handle is at my7chakras. That's at my7chakras. Dawson, are you active on Instagram at the moment?
I have a social media manager who is, yes. But I don't know what handle to use. EFT Universe is our website. And then but mindtomatter.com will get you access to all of those links.
Okay, just go to mindtomatter, and then you'll have all the links to his social media profiles. Dawson, thank you so much for coming on our show, talking to us about the power of our mind to transform our lives and create our known reality, and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Thank you for listening to My 7 Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my-seven chakras.com.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.